Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, a high-level delegation of British government ministers visits the Vatican to step up cooperation with the Holy See on a whole range of shared political, economic, and cultural concerns. Hear from two of those cabinet ministers about the place of faith in Britain today, and from Archbishop Vincent Nicholls of Westminster, who was accompanying the delegation. The right to religious freedom, the need to promote disarmament and sustainable development, to support peace and democracy in North Africa and the Middle East, to promote a culture of social responsibility as the basis of a healthy society. Those were some of the wide-ranging issues discussed by a British government delegation and top Vatican officials on Wednesday during a visit marking the 30th anniversary of the re-establishment of full diplomatic relations between the Holy See and the United Kingdom. Pope Benedict also met with the ministers who were in the Vatican to follow up on contacts made during the 2010 papal visit to Britain.
It was a milestone in our relationship, a milestone in UK history, where heart truly spoke onto heart.
The delegation was led by a young Muslim baroness, Saida Wasi, and included four cabinet ministers and three ministers of state who held talks with the heads of different Vatican offices and pontifical councils.
The largest ever ministerial delegation from the United Kingdom to the Holy See.
A joint communique following the 24-hour visit said Britain and the Holy See look forward to working together to combat intolerance and discrimination based on religion wherever it is manifest.
In practice, this means individuals not diluting their faith and nations not denying their religious heritage.
On Tuesday, Baroness Wasi also gave an important address to the Pontifical Ecclesiastical Academy, which trains future Vatican diplomats. In that speech, she spoke of the need to ensure that faith has a proper space within the public sphere, adding that Europe needs to become more confident in its Christianity.
It's what the Holy Father called the unrenounceable Christian roots of our culture and civilization, which shines through our politics, our public life, our culture, our economics, our language, and our architecture.
Well, keen to hear more about the British government's views on faith communities and about her words with the Pope on Wednesday, I caught up with Baroness Wasi at the end of her visit to the Vatican. Baroness Wasi, you're leading this delegation of British government ministers here to the Vatican. You're bringing a letter also from Prime Minister David Cameron for the Pope, aren't you? Can you tell us a bit about what's in that letter? What is the nature of this mission from the Prime Minister?
Well, this is a historic visit. It's a visit that we discussed at the very successful state papal visit that we had in the United Kingdom in September of 2010. At that time, Prime Minister Cameron indicated that he wanted to deepen this relationship and specifically develop areas upon which we had mutual interests. And this delegation, which is unprecedented really in, first of all, the history of the United Kingdom, but also in the history of the Vatican, for four cabinet ministers, three ministers of state, with a large delegation to visit and have many bilateral discussions, as well as enjoy an audience with the Holy Father.
What can you tell us about that audience with the Pope?
Well, it's the privilege of a second audience that I've had with the Pope. And the first time he asked me to continue to make the case for faith. I explained that my speech here and the work that we'd been doing within the government over the last 20 months was trying to make the case for faith. And he blessed us. He prayed for us. I handed him a gift of the King James Bible from the Prime Minister.
What was his reaction to that?
He opened it. He read the message from the Prime Minister. I also handed him a gift, a personal gift, a translation of the Quran by a gentleman called Mohammed Assad, who translated the spirit of the Quran. And interestingly, he himself was Eastern European. He was born Jewish. He converted to Islam and became, interestingly, Pakistan's first ambassador to the UN.
You also bought this letter from David Cameron to the Pope. Can you tell us anything about the contents of that?
Yes, it was the Prime Minister indicating the importance of the visit, passing on his good wishes, speaking of the very successful visit in 2010, and supporting the delegation and hoping that practical measures come out of that. The joint communique, which has now been issued, deals with some of those areas.
Can you outline what you think perhaps are the most important discussions that have taken place, the most important initiatives that may flow from this?
I think the most important thing that's come out for me is that the Holy See, the Vatican, being the smallest state in the world, has one of the biggest global reaches. It is connected to over 1 billion people around the world. The United Kingdom, too, in its own historical and current context, has a global reach. There are many areas upon which we agree. The world, as we go forward, we know is not based upon geographical relationships, but upon networks. And the Holy See is one of the most networked state in the world. It therefore seems inevitable for the practical outcomes, which we both want as states, for the good of mankind, that we should work together. And we spoke about international aid, we spoke about disarmament, we spoke about climate change, we spoke about the importance of interfaith relations, and we spoke about the importance of making the case for faith.
You're talking about Christians to be more confident in their faith in the UK and indeed throughout Europe, which is a theme very close to Pope Benedict's heart. And yet you said in your speech that when you talk about the government doing God, you get a whole stream of protest letters from people objecting to this. How serious do you think is the government, beyond the historic importance of this visit, of really listening to faith communities?
I would say that the response that we get when I raise the issue of the importance of faith in the public sphere is balanced. You have many people of faith who say, quite literally, thank God somebody is raising this issue. It is something that we've thought about for a long time. We've felt it's an important issue. But then, of course, you always get the vociferous vocal opposite response as well. And as I said in my speech yesterday, that the response actually from the opposite side is broken down into two different places. One, people who are well-intentioned and feel that the only way that you can make minorities and the other feel welcome is by dumbing down the majority. I fundamentally disagree with that. I feel that people who are stronger in their own identity are more welcoming and accommodating of the other because they feel less threatened in their own identity. But secondly, and I think which is the more dangerous type, is what I call the kind of fundamentalist secularism, which is really an aversion to wiping out both historically, culturally, artistically, and in terms of politics, the role of faith in any public life. And that cannot surely be the case. I don't believe, and I make this absolutely clear, I do not believe that faith should have a privileged position or an exclusive position, but I do believe that faith should be a voice amongst many that has a place at the table.
Finally, you've just come back from Pakistan, haven't you, where you were visiting the Christian communities there. You strongly believe that other faith communities should speak out more clearly on behalf of the persecuted Christians there, don't you?
I do, and what I specifically say is that every religion talks about your obligations towards your neighbours. It doesn't define that those neighbours have to be the same faith as you. Every religion talks about the importance of minorities, and I say that true interfaith work is when you see that an attack upon anyone is an attack upon you, and we get true interfaith work when we see, the Jewish community speaking out for the Muslim community, the Muslim community speaking out for the Christian community, and the Christian community speaking out for people of other faith. I think it is when we get to that stage and we are so confident in our own beliefs that we feel that our confident support of another faith is our religious obligation, that I think we will reach the level of religious and social harmony that I hope that both our country and the Vatican aspire to.
Baroness Wasi, who was leading the British government delegation to the Vatican. Another member of the British government delegation meeting with the Pope and top Vatican officials on Wednesday was Jeremy Hunt, Secretary of State for Culture, the Olympics, Media and Sport. He told me about his talks with Cardinal Gianfranco Ravasi, head of the Pontifical Council for Culture.
Yes, we've had some very interesting meetings. On practical level and I suppose on a spiritual level. On a practical level, we talked about the excellent relationships between the Vatican and the UK when it comes to the exchange of works of art. We have fantastic artworks that have been loaned by the Vatican for the Hadrian exhibition and the Treasures of Heaven exhibition in the British Museum. We had the Raphael cartoons in the V&A. We had loans of Hebrew relics for the Jewish Museum in London. The British Library's benefited. And of course, we've got St. Jerome at the Leonardo exhibition on at the moment in the National Gallery, or just finished actually at the National Gallery. So there's an excellent relationship, and London's one of the, and actually is the most visited city in the world. And so it's a good place if you want to get a much broader audience for the amazing treasures here in the Vatican. It's a good place to have a relationship with. And I really came to say thank you, because we've been thrilled with the excellent cooperation that we've had.
Have you got some more plans lined up, if you like, for the coming months, coming years?
Well, that'll be a matter for the individual museums. But, you know, the sense I got was that there was great warmth in the relationship. And we also want to collaborate with the Vatican on including a British artist in the Vatican Pavilion at the next Venice Biennale, which is the first time I think the Vatican has done a pavilion. And we're very honoured that they want to have a British artist as part of that, and we're going to give them every support we can in helping them to find a good British artist who would fulfil the right criterion. So I think it was very good on that level, but I also, with Cardinal Ravasi, had a more spiritual conversation really about the role of art in strengthening a sense of spirituality in society and the challenge of secularism and the argument that we need to make for the world thinking that spirituality is a part of happiness. Happiness isn't just part of the satisfaction of material needs. And of course, art is another way into that dialogue, and Cardinal Ravasi has been a huge champion of the connection between culture and art and spirituality. So we had a very, very interesting and wide-ranging discussion.
That's a difficult message to get across to a large part of the British public, isn't it? And particularly a large part of the British media. What ideas do you have, perhaps, of being able to pursue this concept when you get back home to Britain?
You're right, it is a difficult message. And we talked about that. And we talked about the challenge for the Catholic Church of not being defined by its views on contraception and homosexuality and abortion. Important issues though they are, there's a great deal more to faith than those issues. So we talked about that, and we also reflected on the fact that the visit of His Holiness to Britain in September of 2010 was a huge moment in which the personality, the compassion, the spirituality of His Holiness was able to convey better than any words that there is so much more to faith than just simply focusing on one or two issues where there are disagreements. And we sort of reflected on the fact that what the Pope does is as important as what he says.
Are there any more ideas to develop, as you say, the very positive results of that papal visit? I'm thinking particularly Cardinal Ravasi's project of Courtyard of the Gentiles. I understand there is some talk of something along those lines in the UK in the not-too-distant future.
Yes, and we have on BBC and other channels have had the start of some big debates between the sort of Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, sort of militant atheist line and the sort of the faith lines. But I said to Cardinal Ravasi that I think the Christian Church of all denominations needs to have a stronger voice.
Because the Catholic Church. The
Catholic Church and the Anglican Church. I think the Christian faith needs to have a stronger voice in those discussions. It almost feels to me sometimes like people looking for spirituality tend to be tempted by Buddhism, meditation, many other faiths. When we've got a fantastic one right on our doorstep, that because it's so familiar can be overlooked. And I think we need to do something about that.
You're also, as you mentioned, Minister for Sports and for the Olympics. I know you've got quite a significant involvement of faith communities, including the Catholic Church, in the run-up and during that great event in Britain in the summer.
We do, you know, we are very proud of the fact that the Olympics, as well as being a fantastic sporting occasion, is an occasion which brings the world together. More countries competing in the Olympics in London this summer than there are members of the United Nations. And you see countries like North Korea and Burma, countries put their heads above the parapet or you wouldn't normally see. And I think those Olympic values are something that can be really important and valuable in the world. So, you know, we want to make sure that the broader message about Olympic values isn't lost in the hurly-burly of hosting the world's biggest sporting event.
So you're hoping that the faith communities involved can spread, if you like, the concept that you're putting across?
Yes. I don't want to overstate hosting the Olympic Games as a religious moment, but I think that there's a lot of overlap between Olympic values and many faith values. And, you know, the Olympics is... Olympic values, for me, are about people striving to be the best they can be, but within a context of friendship between the nations. And I think that would find a lot of echoes in many values of many faiths. And I think it's great to explore the common ground.
What do you see at this point as the biggest challenges you're facing? I'm sure there are many in the lead-up to the Games, but I'm thinking particularly on the basis of other Games in the past. We've seen great concerns amongst the faith communities, for example, for trafficking, the social concerns, if you like.
Well, we are extremely alive to those, and we are monitoring the situation with human trafficking very closely. So far, we haven't seen any evidence that there has been a large increase in it in the run-up to the Games in London, but we're keeping a very, very close watch on that. And, you know, we want this to be a summer of celebration and values that bring the world together, and we don't want it to be marred by awful things like that. So we'll be keeping our eyes wide open.
Jeremy Hunt is Britain's Secretary of State for Culture, Olympics, Media and Sport. Accompanying the British government delegation was Archbishop Vincent Nicholls of Westminster, president of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. He told me he believed this visit to be the high point in relations between the United Kingdom and the Holy See.
Well, I believe it's very significant indeed. It's a historic visit. I don't think there has ever been a visit of six government ministers to the Holy See. We're also marking the 30th anniversary of the restoration of full diplomatic relations. Now, the diplomatic history between our country and the Holy See goes back to 1470, I think it is. But I think this is a high point, actually, right across the sweep of those centuries. And it's a signal of the important and growing relationship between the British government and the Holy See, and therefore a recognition of the role that the Catholic Church plays throughout the world in some crucial issues in the world today.
The delegation is led by a Muslim minister, Baroness Wasi. We heard her talking about the need for the UK and indeed Europe to be more confident in its Christianity. That's a message that rings very dear to Pope Benedict and indeed to the Church in Britain today.
Well, that's true. She is in a unique position, coming from a family originating from Pakistan, a Muslim, a woman. So she has a kind of an audience which is attentive to what she says, probably unlike many other people today. And this is a constant theme of her speeches. So she's made a similar appeal to the bishops of the Church of England. She's made a similar appeal in a Jewish setting, and I think in a Muslim setting, and now in a Catholic setting. So she really is very committed to the positive good that faith confidently expressed and offered as a contribution to the common good really does make. And she's equally critical of those who, with a kind of stubbornness, with a dogmatism, want to isolate faith and privatise it. And it is often that kind of intolerance of the reality of faith which is holding back some of the best contributions that can be made to the common good.
And yet, as she has said publicly, when she talks about the government doing God in a more open way, she receives a storm of protest letters. As you say, this current of strong resistance to faith being practiced much more openly. Why are British people, the average British person, if you like, so fearful of this greater contribution of faith to the public life?
Well, I don't think the average British person is. I think there are some who make a lot of noise, make their voices heard, I think we saw exactly the same contrast in the run-up to the visit of Pope Benedict, when in the days before he came, there was an awful lot of noise. There was an awful lot of protest from a few. It was quickly outweighed by, I think, the much more widespread view that recognised in the Pope the representative of a faith and of an integrity and of a lack of self-interest that Catholicism at its best brings to society. So I don't think we should confuse what is a more widespread, though perhaps less vocally expressed view, with those who grab headline attention. I mean, as I go around the country, I gave a lecture in Cambridge last week, and I was very heartened to recognise in the audience, which was a broad cross-section from Cambridge University, it was in a Christian-Jewish setting, to recognise in that audience a realisation that we need to find ways of allowing the strength and the goodness of faith, as it were, to breathe into our public life. Now, as Baroness Varsi said, this is not a question of, as it were, trying to infiltrate institutions of government and, as it were, divert them away from the normal pattern of work. But it is recognising that when it comes to service, when it comes to insight into humanity, when it comes to the motivations that really move people on, that faiths have got an awful lot to offer. That breathing in and out the realities of faith with the realities of public administration, the work of education, etc., is not easy, but that's what we have to learn.
Is this visit to the Vatican then a real indication of a much more determined effort on the part of the government to listen more closely to that voice of the faith communities, particularly the Catholic Church, perhaps?
Well, and the focus here is obviously on the Catholic Church. And one of the features of this visit is that the topics under discussion range far and wide, and they are global issues. Clearly, the British government does have a leading role in many of the issues that affect our world, in some of the topics that we're covering, for example, like the international work for disarmament and nuclear disarmament and the proliferation of small arms, in the work of education around the world, in the issues to do with climate change. These are big global issues in which British government does take a lead, and I think they recognise that the Holy See has a reach that is far beyond most other institutions. So there is a global perspective, but also I think there is a British perspective, because in a time of recession or in a time of economic hardship, we do as a society fall back on our goodwill and fall back on a need to look out for each other, a need for good neighbourliness, a need to see ourselves as supportive of one another. And in a myriad of circumstances, it's people who are generous and people who are often, not exclusively, often inspired by their faith, who will take a leading part in that. Sometimes the language is used of the big society. It's not particularly a happy phrase, but it means, at least in part, urging people to look around them and to play an active contributing part to the well-being of their neighbourhood. And churches and religious groups have done that for a long time.
If I understand correctly, there are some quite concrete ideas on the table as a follow-up beyond this visit for ideas of cooperation, perhaps cultural exchanges. Can you tell us anything about those at all?
Well, I think those discussions are still going on. I think that's important because culture and the world of the arts is a great vehicle for the expression of the spiritual dimension of human endeavour. And indeed, as Archbishop Mamberti said yesterday, when a culture is cut off from its spiritual sources and its spiritual roots, then it very quickly kind of withers a bit. You don't want culture and an artistic expression, for example, to be in the hands of a political party or a particular political perspective. It has to breathe with that wholeness of the human spirit, and that includes its religious expression. So there is an inherent connection between art, the spiritual, and the religious. And I think we've seen that in London. There's been a series of exhibitions over the last 10 years showing to the public religious art at its best, and they've been hugely attractive to people. And the attendance at those tells us that the religious quest, the spiritual dimension of life in modern Britain, is as vibrant as ever.
Finally, we're looking ahead to the season of Lent. You've got a number of interesting initiatives coming up in your own diocese, haven't you, to mark this season, and also, again, to make the voice, perhaps, of the Church a little bit more visible in British society.
Well, obviously, the initiatives that we take range over a whole way of doing things. We publish across England and Wales a little booklet called Walk With Me, which is a very personal, meditative accompaniment for people during the weeks of Lent. Now, you know, we sell 300,000 of those around the country. We have group work in Westminster Diocese for the groups that will meet and work through Lent through various topics, and then we have public lectures as well. And the public lectures are again trying to explore the impact of faith in different spheres of life. So there's a variety of outlets, because people operate in a variety of ways, from sitting quietly on a bus journey, having a prayer and a meditation, to attending a public lecture and getting the encouragement from that as well.
There's also going to be a three-part series, I believe, on British television about the Church, different aspects of the Catholic Church. Tell us more about that.
Well, I've had the privilege of seeing these three programmes before they're broadcast, and they are beautiful. They are simply called Catholics, first of all, priests, Catholics, children, and Catholics, women. The one that is made about four men as they work through seminary formation and three of them come to ordination is based at Allen Hall in London, and it is very beautifully made. The quality of the photography in all three is quite stunning, and there is a lovely down-to-earth kind of narrative that goes through each of them. The seminarians speak very eloquently, and most beautifully, that first programme has a clear focus on the Eucharist. So the producer of the programme has really understood what lies at the heart of priesthood. The one about children is based up in the village of Chipping in Lancashire, so it's entirely different. It's a small Catholic community, and it shows a class of children preparing for their first Holy Communion over a number of months. And then the third one, Catholic women, I think in a way is the most attractive of all. It has been made around Westminster Cathedral with a lot of interviews, a lot of talking and listening to the women who come into the Westminster Cathedral. It is one of the most beautiful pieces of television I think I've seen for a long, long time. And the women who speak on the programme are very realistic. They're very down to earth. They explain where they can't understand or disagree with the Church's teaching, but they do it in a way that shows the depth of their spiritual lives and of their prayer. And the star of the show is Rosie, who is the sacristan at Westminster Cathedral. She's our guide, and she comes across as a woman of great faith who gets on with her work, gets on with her life, but it's all solidly underpinned with a loving trust in the Lord. And they are three lovely programmes. They're being broadcast on BBC 4 starting next Thursday, the 23rd, and they are very worthwhile watching.
My thanks there to Archbishop Vincent Nicholls of Westminster, President of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.